You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
I thought I would read this poem that I'm still working on. It's a longish poem, and it's a poem that I'm actually having a lot of trouble with. It has to do with my own, I guess, confusion with encountering beauty. In this case, it's my wife. I find that she says these incredible things to me, and I can't remember them. And we have a very interesting relationship, it seems to me, that either I'm doing all the talking and she's doing all the listening, or she's doing all the talking and I'm doing all the listening. You know, she said this incredible thing to me the other day. She said, "I want you to touch me as if you wanted to know me, not arouse me." I was like, huh? It took me about a month to realize how profound it was, you know, what she said. And it dawned on me that that was the way I lived my life, maybe, you know, trying to arouse something out of the every situation instead of trying to know the situation. And it furthered me in writing this poem, which is unfinished. It's called The Undressing.
She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter. You just heard Lee Young Lee setting up his poem, The Undressing, which you'll get to hear excerpts from on this show.
Stacy, Lee Young Lee joins show correspondent Sarah Chavez in the Air Schooner studios to talk about the poet and the body, and how the two work together, and sometimes how they don't work together when they should.
We'll have more on that later, but right now we're going to get back to Lee's unpublished work in progress called The Undressing.
"Listen," she says. "I'm listening," I say, and kiss her chin. "Obviously you're not," she says. I kiss her nose and both of her eyes. "I can do more than one thing at a time," I tell her. "Trust me." I kiss her cheeks. "You've heard of planting lotuses in a fire," she says. "You've heard of sifting gold from sand. You know perfumed flesh in anklets, and spirit unadorned take turns at lead and follow, one in action and repose."
Lee Young Lee is the author of the award-winning books of poetry titled Behind My Eyes, Book of My Nights, and The City in Which I Love You. His other work includes Breaking the Alabaster Jar, Conversations with Lee Young Lee, a collection of 12 interviews with Lee at various stages of his artistic development. He's also the author of The Winged Seed, A Remembrance, a memoir which received an American Book Award from the Before Columbus Foundation.
He's been the recipient of an Academy of American Poets Fellowship, a Lannan Literary Award, a Whiting Writers Award, a Guggenheim Fellowship, and a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship, among many other awards.
Lee talked to Sarah Chavez some more about what he's trying to do in that poem, The Undressing, including his attempt to consider some more comprehensive ideas of what it means to actually be a human being.
I think it's dangerous for us to disassociate ourselves from any part of us, you know. I do believe that the practice of any art is finally the practice of our totality. You know, we're trying to bring everything we are. We're trying to account for all of who we are, you know, in any artwork. And the more we can do that, the better I think it is for the piece of art that we're working on, you know. Because I know that the poems I love and all of the work that I love, whether it's music or paintings, whatever, I experience a kind of totality, a comprehensiveness. I'm interested in, how do I say this? I guess comprehensive definitions of human being. Comprehensive definitions of human being. You know, not just intellectual definitions or physical definitions or biological definitions or geographical definitions or anthropological definitions or historical definitions. I'm interested in comprehensive definitions, you know. So especially, I think, in the writings that I love to read and study and apprentice myself to, those are all works that try to achieve that or aspire to that, you know. And that's the work that I get the most out of. I kiss her neck and behind her ear. "But there are things you need reminded of," she says. "So remind me, love," I say. "There are stories we tell ourselves," she says. "There are stories we tell others. Then there's the sum of our hours death will render legible." I unfasten the top button of her blouse and nibble her throat with more kisses. "Go on," I say. "I'm listening." "You better be," she says. "You'll be tested." I think it's a confusion between the erotic and the spiritual, and maybe my even thinking that they're separate, that the erotic and the spiritual are different, is my own problem. Maybe they're not different, you know. But it seems to me that sometimes in this poem, I think what this poem is about is my confusion of the female figure is trying to give me this knowledge, but I'm confusing her physical presence with that knowledge. You know, so I'm getting kind of stalled at the threshold of the. It's like confusing the temple for what the temple is supposed to contain, or something like that. You know, and I was trying to work that out in this poem. You know. And for me, that whole, the tension between being a physical being and a spiritual being is so fraught with anxiety for me and so crisis-laden.
So let's return to the undressing and see how Lee Young Lee figures out that crisis in the next stanza of the poem.
I undo the second, the third, the fourth, and the last buttons quickly, and then lean in to kiss her collarbone. She says, "The world is a story that keeps beginning. In it, you have lived severally disguised. Bright ash, dark ash, mirror, moon, a child waking in the night to hear the thunder. A traveler stopping to ask the way home. And there's still the butterfly's night sea journey to consider." She says, "There are dreams we dream alone. There are dreams we dream with others. Then there's the lilac's secret life of fire, of God accomplished in the realm of change and desire." I do know many poets who practice poetry and do it very well, but they don't believe it has anything to do with their lives, so they go out and they don't take anything they know in the poem into their lives. I think that that's actually dangerous, you know? I think a poet, for instance, like Robert Frost, he's written so many great poems. I don't think he listened to his own poems. I think the knowledge he had, the knowledge those poems gave him, he didn't process it. You know, if he had, I think he would have been a different person. You know, I think his politics would have been a lot clearer, a lot more enlightened. I think as a person he would have been more enlightened. Because the enlightenment that actually happens in the writing of his poems is just, I think it's still a high bar. It's incredible, some of those poems. You know, but he was such an asshole in life, you know. And the only thing I can say is, you know, if he could remember what those poems told him, if he could realize what I practiced in my studio needs to be in the world and needs to affect me as a person, I think that that does contribute to him being a safer person. He was not a very safe person to be around, you know. And I came to a place in my life that I thought, I'm not safe to be around. I don't like that, you know. And then I thought, what am I doing writing poems? Because I know that when I was growing up, the world felt like a very unsafe place. There was a lot of political crisis and social crisis, and being in this body was a crisis. And when I discovered poetry, I heard the voice of a hard-won goodness, a bedrock goodness that was hard-won and a beacon to kind of live toward. And I thought, wow, you know, it's worth being human. I mean, for my first few years of my life, I thought, human beings are just the worst things on earth. They just kill each other, and they just, you know, and single you out for just having different colored skin. And but when I started discovering the voices of poets, I think I was discovering a human voice that sounded like a paradigm for safe human beings. And that's what brought me to poetry, you know. And so when I started like putting my money where my mouth was, I suddenly realized I need to practice this seriously, you know, and listen to what the poems are telling me and try to live that, you know.
You know, Scott, I really love what he says there about a poem being the voice of a hard-won goodness. And I feel like Lee really embodies that in his own poems.
Yeah, and he talked a little bit more about his history and the history of his own body and exploring what it meant to dwell within it.
I found that growing up, it was very dangerous for me to be in this body. I was born in Indonesia at a time when, in a five-year span, about, I think, 300,000 Chinese were killed, and many more were imprisoned. So my father was imprisoned for being Chinese. And so being in this body was a crisis. And then we traveled throughout Asia before coming to this country. And when we came to this country was at war with an Asian country. So I looked like the enemy. So it was a crisis to be in this body again. But the whole time I was going through that, I had a sense that I was not just this body, but more, that I was a child of God, you know, that I was, I had this sense that I'd been alive for millions of years. And at the same time, I felt like I was born yesterday. And it wasn't until I started hearing poetry that I heard a voice that approximated that voice, you know, that a voice of somebody who was both all and nothing, you know. And of course, that's where we get this idea of the Orphic voice or the orphaned voice. Those words come from the same root, you know, that the Orphic voice is the orphaned voice. I am with William Blake on this, that the body is the outermost volume of the soul. That's exactly what it is, you know. But as I get older, I am coming to peace with it, both its the body's temporality, the body's appetites, the body's limitations, you know, and I'm beginning to love all of that and come to terms with that.
You know, Scott, one of the things I've always really loved about Lee Young Lee's work is the way he troubles or blurs distinctions between things in favor of a kind of both at onceness, so that the body and the soul, the ancient and the new, the erotic and the spiritual, it's all sort of blurred together as a kind of oneness. And I think that really came through here in the episode.
Yeah, Lee asks a lot of poets, not just from their poetry, but from their lives. And we'd like to thank Sarah Chavez for interviewing Lee Young Lee, who is also very generous with his time. Listen for Lee later this year on Air Schooner's ongoing reading series, which continues next week with Macedonian poet Nikola Madzarov.
He'll be reading his home theme poems in both English and Macedonian, so I'm really looking forward to that, and thanks, as always, for listening to Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.